This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, Episode 2. Dr. Rob, this is our first official social distancing podcast. Now, we've done one by Skype before, but not it's because you've been out of town. Now we are purposely on Skype because we have to social distance and we can't be in the same room together.
You've got a dirty basement.
I do have a very dirty basement, though I did clean the desk a little bit today. Believe it or not, this is my third podcast interview this morning. We're recording this on March 28th. I spent my morning working on my other podcast, which is the Total Tuscany podcast. Many of you may know, or many may not know, that I have a little side business where I help people plan trips to Italy. We all know that Italy's been devastated by the coronavirus, and the people that I was talking to this morning work exclusively in tourism. And can you just imagine what their life is like right now? Today was day 24 of total lockdown for those guys, Rob.
Wow. And it doesn't look like anything's getting better anytime soon there or anywhere else for that matter.
Yeah, you know, you're in the business. You're in the medical field. You're a doctor. I keep hearing, I heard something the other day that in 3 weeks here, it's going to be really bad. Can you confirm or deny those rumors?
It's hard to say. Now, there's a fair amount of truth to it, but there's also, depending on where you're looking around the country, all of these different population densities, demographics, et cetera, play a huge role in this as well. So New York City is obviously getting hammered right now. I know you talk to a lot of the medical – we talk to a lot of our medical colleagues in New York City, and it's – one of them described it as it was just like it was on the day of 9/11, 2001, except it's like that every day up there right now in the major hospital emergency rooms. It's a constant form, and it's absolutely brutal. Omaha's probably not going to ever be anywhere near that bad.
That's just pure numbers, right?
Exactly. And that's just a pure population-based thing. At the same time as well, too, you're probably never going to see Shadron, DeWitt, Ainsworth, et cetera, get anywhere near as bad as Omaha gets. Again, you get fewer people, you put more space in between people, you decrease that risk significantly. And so there's parts of the country, parts of the United States that are currently in dire straits as we sit talking here right now. And so it is really bad. How bad is it going to get? That's really, really hard to tell. Because again, you've got some different population dynamics going on between, say, let's look at the countries that are in really bad shape right now: Italy, Spain, France, Iran, parts of the United States. Is it going to get a lot worse? Is it going to go nationwide here in the U.S. compared to, say, New York? It's hard to say. I think you had some of these major population centers that did react kind of slow to this initially. I think Nebraska was one of the states, Omaha, Lincoln in particular, that maybe took it a little more seriously and took the social distancing thing seriously sooner than other parts of the country did. And I think a lot of that goes back to having UNMC, the big biocontainment, bioterrorism center at UNMC, where nearly day one of this, you had coronavirus patients being transferred to Omaha for containment and treatment. I think that raised everybody's awareness locally. So I'll be interested to see how a city like Omaha does compare ultimately with some of the other big population areas around the United States. It's hard to get a good long-term feel for this, especially when you compare it to, say, where it all started in China. you've got some really, really difficult dynamics to deal with in China. One, and I could go into some statistical analysis here of why I very strongly believe this, but I very strongly do not believe any of the numbers that are coming out of China. I think they're ridiculously low on a massive scale. So it's hard to look at China and say, hey, this is how to deal with the problem, and this is how things are going to work in all the other countries around the world. At the same time, you've got a communist dictatorship that can institute martial law, which, I hate to say this, is a fairly effective way to treat this as well, too. So China alone, you kind of got to throw them out the window in terms of how to deal with it, because one, I don't trust their numbers. Two, they can deal with it in a way that actually works pretty well that I think most other countries in the world aren't willing to go full on institution of dictatorship, martial law in terms of treating it.
Hey, I got to ask you, are you drinking a beer while we're recording this? I am
drinking a beer.
What are you drinking?
Well, I'm actually drinking a Founders Centennial IPA because I had a 15 pack of it in my garage. So that's what I'm drinking right now.
I went out to my garage. You know what I had? I had LaCroix. So I'm drinking a LaCroix. I'm drinking a watermelon LaCroix. Go ahead.
That makes me sad, Travis.
It makes me sad too, Rob. It really does.
Just disappointed.
Oh,
well, you did see that. What was it? The governor okayed you can now pick up mixed drinks to go in up to what, a gallon container, as long as it's closed containers.
Yeah, define closed container, because to me that sounds like a roadie, right? Give me a styrofoam cup with a lid on it.
Yeah, I believe that is what they said.
that's no different than a roadie. Like when you leave the country club, can I have one to go?
Yeah, just don't stick a straw in it is all.
Yes. Yeah, that's going to be...
Those straws are going to kill us all at some point.
See, that's going to be hard. Speaking of open containers, listen, this is a tough time. We're not going to deny or sugarcoat the fact that our sponsors are going to hurt through some of this, all right? Look at Chad at Ticket Express. When you have every event known to man postponed or canceled, and you've got tickets out there, and you look at the swim trials, all that stuff. Just remember to support the sponsors of the show because they make the show happen. Ticket Express at TicketExpress.com. We just mentioned beer. You're drinking a Founders, but Infusion Brewing Company has been so good to Rob and myself, and we drink a lot of Infusion beer. In fact, we were at the Chili Cook-Off on March 8th, really before the bad stuff started to hit.
Wouldn't have even thought about doing that today.
No,
that's the crazy thing.
Well,
and it seems like it was just, I hate saying it. I'm going like, that was just 2 weeks ago.
But you know
it
what?
It literally was 2 weeks ago.
We had some really good chili though, didn't we? I mean,
we did.
And there was a good crowd there, and we had a lot of different beer. I know last night they had a drive-through on their Southwest location for the Cajun fish fry. But you can still get beer to go, which is really cool. So we highly encourage you when you want a beer, when you need some beer, if you're in the Omaha area, visit the Benson location, or you can go to the Southwest location and pick up some beer to go, because we love Infusion beer, don't we, Rob?
Oh, drink. I think I'm probably going to go out today. I'm going to break a little quarantine and go get some Infusion.
I haven't talked to Scotty from Husker Hounds, but you know, you can't have more than 10 people in the retail shop, but I got to believe, Big Red fans,
which he does have an online site.
He does. You can go to huskerhounds.com. Husker fans like to buy their red all year long, and you can be a Husker Hound all year long. I don't even know if he uses that tagline anymore. But just remember, especially our local sponsors. And then Dave Remington, he's let us know that he's back on for another year, so the Remington Trophy will be the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And I know Dave's, he lives in New York, but the last I saw on Facebook, he was like hunkering down in Vermont somewhere. It's like he saw what was happening and got the hell out of Dodge, Rob.
Dave's not afraid to travel.
No.
I think he got the heck out of there pretty soon in the process.
And so, I mean, how many times, because you're a doctor, do your friends call you? Does your family call you? I mean, how are you just being inundated right now with COVID-19 information that you're supposed to provide everybody?
See, when you're in the health, when you're in any kind of health profession, the two things that are always true: one, family will never ever listen to what you say.
That's true.
Two, everybody else will want to get your advice for everything. So, you know, I get kind of the biggest question I keep getting, and it is the whole, is this for real? How bad is this going to get? And I got to be honest, I wish I had a good answer. I think it's, again, it's going to be pretty bad, and there's good reasons why. It's, you've got a virus that hasn't been transmitted amongst humans, at least that we know of, previous to this. So there's no, I'm calling it natural immunity, but most of us on some way, shape, form, or level, our immune systems have at least seen influenza A, influenza B, whether it's in terms of catching the flu or getting a flu shot every year. Our immune systems at least are a little bit more, a little bit better equipped to deal with that. It's something they've at least seen before. Now, it doesn't mean you've got this innate antibody level in your body to prevent influenza A and B on a yearly basis. But if you do see it, it's not this incredibly new, never seen before, that your body's going to lack complete ability to fight off. This one kind of is. And so that adds a degree of concern to it. It seems like this has a slightly higher risk of contagiousness, the infectiousness, the infectability, it's a little higher than normal influenza. The mortality numbers, it varies a lot because, I mean, you kind of almost got to run the course, but at least right now, the mortality numbers on this do seem to be slightly higher than regular influenza. And so if you think about it in that regard, that during a regular flu season, which lasts months, here in terms of like a hardcore being affected by this, we got about a month or two under our belt of this.
Yeah.
Right now in the United States, normal flu season's running from what, like mid, late fall into early spring. So for us to really know what the numbers are going to look like, you figure in a regular season of influenza, the United States by itself experiences 30 to 50,000 influenza-related deaths every year.
That's a big number, by the way.
That's a huge number, especially when you look at the concern worldwide that we've seen with this, where right now, only at this point in time, approaching 30,000 deaths worldwide from this. So in terms of how bad this will probably be before it's all said and done, you're probably looking at factors of 10 greater on a worldwide basis.
So is this something, I didn't mean to cut you off, but is this something like once we get a vaccine that this becomes influenza C as in corona? I mean, we have A, B, does this become influenza C?
To a degree, it will. Now, I call them the other influenzas, which would be like your H1N1 swine flu, your SARS, MERS, things like that. Those get thrown into the flu vaccine every year now since they first popped up.
Okay.
Now, thankfully, we haven't had a big H1N1 flu outbreak for a few years now. Now, is that because we're getting vaccinated for it yearly, or is it just because H1N1 has kind of randomly decided it's kind of gone into hibernation for a while? These things tend to move in they go in cycles. You don't always get the same strains of A and B. You don't always get the exact same viruses circulating on a year-to-year basis. But yeah, this is going to be something that we'll probably see going forward. That's going to be added, assuming they get a good solid vaccine for it. It's something we're probably going to be getting vaccinated for every year, and something we're going to have to deal with on an ongoing basis every X number of years. Now, is that going to be, are we going to see big coronavirus outbreaks every 2 to 3 years, every 5 to 10 years? That I don't know. But this is going to go into that regular repertoire of vaccinations and viral outbreaks that you see with SARS and the other avian flus, the swine flus, things like that. Like I said, there's reasons this one's bad, but we're probably going to, this is going to, at some point, this will be just, I don't want to call it just another flu, but it's going to go into that repertoire of flus that affect mankind going forward.
Man, how about you? So are you going to work every day? Is the ortho hospital still open? What's the protocol for doing surgeries?
It is. Now, most all the facilities in Omaha, save a handful of kind of some of the smaller under the radar ones, most of your major ones, so UNMC, Methodist, Ortho Nebraska, we've gone to basically not doing elective surgeries, which the so basically everything we're doing, it's urgent stuff, it's emergent stuff, stuff that kind of needs to get done. And so if and there are ortho emergencies, there's ortho urgent cases that we got to do. I mean, stuff that where you can look at somebody and say, hey, okay, this, they're not going to die if we don't do this surgery, but you know what, if we don't do this particular surgery, this person's going to have trouble ever walking again, or this person's going to have trouble ever using that hand again. Those are things you got to do. And so those are the surgeries we're still doing. That's maybe reduced it to probably, man, I'd guess 10 to 20% of what we normally do on a daily basis. It's a pretty significant decrease. And the reasons are to protect everybody, keep people quarantined, keep people from coming in, protect the healthcare providers, et cetera.
Have you started binge watching anything yet? Been on the Netflix? Because I watched Tiger King this. I binge watched Tiger King all day yesterday when I got home from work.
My wife has watched all episodes of Tiger King.
That's fucked up, dude.
I think she knocked it out in one day. I haven't watched it yet. I don't know. It seems like it's one of those that I have this fear if I watch it, I will walk away with a much lower opinion of mankind.
You may. I had no idea so many people own tigers and lions and wildlife.
I kind of knew that because I'd seen I saw a statistic floating around that there are more tigers in captivity in the state of Texas than there is in the wild in the rest of the world.
I don't know about Texas, but there are definitely more in captivity than there are. There's like 10 to 15,000 in the United States and only 4,000 in the wild.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Now you got to watch this because there are some characters, man. It's like, wow, I had no idea. And the twists and turns and the plots, and the person who starts out as the protagonist, to me, she's the worst of them all. You leave the show basically thinking she's a murderer. So I highly encourage everybody to sit back, watch a little Tiger King and go, wow, I'm glad I'm not that screwed up.
Yeah, I'm honestly trying to play catch up. I started watching, there's a show, it's another Netflix series called Altered Carbon.
That sounds too scientific for me. That sounds like you got to be smart.
It's a very sci-fi one, but it has kind of some religious and other ramifications. Well, mostly it's a sci-fi. Action.
Are you an Ozarks guy?
Oh, I haven't started season three yet, but that's when once I start Ozark, I'll knock that out in a couple of days easy.
Wow, man.
That's the one I'll watch till 2 a.m. like three nights in a row and just knock it out.
Okay,
love Ozark.
So I haven't done season two yet because season one freaked the hell out of me, man. I mean, I got like freaked out, like I couldn't watch it. So I need to get my gumption back up and start watching season two.
It does. It doesn't get any better in season two.
Gee, thanks. Way to encourage me.
Yeah, I mean, it's in an addictive way. I mean, I've been just like, oh, thank God season three's here so I've got it again. So,
I mean, how long?
I was a big, I never watched Breaking Bad when it was on TV. And so about a year ago, I binged watched Breaking Bad. And I haven't started with Better Call Saul yet, but that's the next one on my list. But it's one of those, once I know I start watching it, I'm not going to stop.
Okay, we may have the same answer, I don't know. If we do, we're probably going to look down upon. Do you miss sports? Do you miss not having baseball? Or did you miss the NCAA tournament as much as you thought it would?
No, because I'm a big college football guy. Yeah. And once you get outside of that, it's kind of... There's kind of some very specific events. I mean, I got a buddy, and every year he and his wife, day one of March Madness, he schedules a day of vacation every year in advance, and he and his wife will go to Buffalo Wild Wings, grab a table, invite friends, and everybody, a bunch of us will kind of just rotate through with them and watch a whole slew of first round games, have a couple of beers, hang out, eat some chicken wings. Like that I'm going to miss, or have missed. But that has nothing to do with basketball. 9/10 of it is hanging out with this one little group of people my wife and I like. But outside of that, not really. Do you know what I miss is the youth sports. So my son wrestles, went to state wrestling. State wrestling wrapped up right about the time all of this stuff hit. So state wrestling ended, and then all the restrictions started hitting. You saw the restrictions with where Nebraska was, what, one of four or five states that held state basketball. And even that I'm torn on, because I'm sitting there looking at, like, the state basketball where – they did immediate friends and family only. And you're sitting here going, man, it's God, should we really be doing this? I mean, God, this is a high risk thing to put, even though it's just friends and family, to put these teams, this number of people in one location. On the flip side, man, I've never watched so many Nebraska high school state basketball games on TV in my life.
Yeah, what'd they say, like over a million views, was it? Or was it 150,000? I forget what was it. It was like 1.2 million?
I couldn't tell you, but it was a lot. And I watched all the Class A games, Class B and C state title games, couple of the B and C semifinals as well too. I mean, it was just I've got kids in sports, and so you learn you love youth sports if you've got kids in sports, and you kind of knew this was going to be the last thing you were watching as far as high school sports went for a while.
Yeah, it was, and who knows how long it's going to go. Of course, let's transition into Husker football, because well, we'd be talking about spring practice right now. Given where this team is, the way it finished up last season, how detrimental is it that they're not having spring practice?
I think it's huge, because I think they were also going to work in a lot of changes. I think you're going to see changes on the offensive line. I know it's not a guarantee, but I think the coaches had talked pretty extensively. It wasn't just the media. You saw the coaches talking about moving Farniok from tackle to guard. You heard the coaches talking about Bryce Benhart at right tackle. You heard them talking about Ethan Piper potentially getting playing time at guard. We could have seen a completely revamped offensive line. I mean, you could have maybe had Juergens at center, Hymus at left tackle, and then you could have had Farniok and Ethan Piper at guard and Bryce Benhart at right tackle. I mean, three out of the five spots were going to be completely different. And so that's a big change. And now, do you institute that change just with – and again, I'm saying this with the idea of let's assume at this point in time this crap with COVID-19 is going to wrap up by, say, midsummer. And that's a mildly optimistic assessment, which means late July, early August, they get rolling with fall camp. Are you going to be able to put in an offensive line, make those changes just in a fall camp? So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's a huge loss for things like that to not have this. You are going to have a completely revamped defensive line. The older Daniels brother, is it Darian's was the senior? All of a sudden, I'm getting confused here now. Plus, I'm drinking a beer. But you've got the older Daniels brothers graduated. You've got the Davis twins have graduated. This one is going to be a completely revamped defensive line in terms of that first couple of units. The five, six, seven guys that you were going to see playing consistently for those front three defensive linemen in Chenander's defense, that was going to be kind of a lot of new faces in there. Guys like Ty Robinson, how's he going to fit in? Were you going to have a true freshman like Nash Hutmacher coming in and playing as a true freshman? Stuff like that. I mean, those are things that would have shaken out to a fair degree. You would have during spring ball, who these main players are going to be going into fall camp, and now you don't have that, it's hard to put a finger on where these guys are going to fit in.
I'm reading a story in the Omaha World Herald, and it's by Sam McEwen, and it's an interesting article because it happened, and I don't know if you happen to see it today, but it's about what will it take for the Huskers to shake the reliance on quarterback runs. What I thought was interesting is we've always talked about the usefulness of a mobile quarterback. And you look at the teams in the West Division, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota. Minnesota finished 11-2, Wisconsin 10-4, Iowa 10-3. Those three schools barely used their quarterback in run situations at all. Neither one of their quarterbacks missed a game. And then you have Nebraska, who runs more than uses their quarterback more than any other team in the Big Ten.
And we were running three different quarterbacks all year.
I don't think the mobile quarterback ever goes away, but do you think we start seeing a time when the quarterback runs less? I mean, Penn State ran a lot.
Let's be clear here. That's not a mobile quarterback or not a mobile quarterback issue. That's more of a quality of offensive line play, and what do you have at running back issue? Yeah. I mean, if you look at Penn State, there's a great example. Man, Saquon Barkley graduates first round pick with the Giants.
But they still finished 11-2.
Trace McSorley's senior year, Penn State was heavily reliant upon Trace McSorley.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, his carry shot way up, and their running game was predicated on him, and their offensive productivity was drastically reduced. So the mobile quarterback is a great weapon to have. If I'm a football coach, and you give me the choice of, hey, you're going to have an offense that has a really, really good mobile quarterback or not, I'm taking the mobile quarterback every time without question, because it adds a dimension to the offense that is absolutely invaluable. What the problem is when that's your main threat. And the last two seasons, that's to a big chunk, to a fair degree, 2 years ago, absolutely, definitely last year, that was Nebraska's problem. Now, if all of a sudden you've got a really solid running back who the defense has to account for, if you've got a really solid third down back or slot guy that the defense has to account for, if you've got some deep passing threats that the defense now has to account for, that's where a mobile quarterback goes from being a good thing for your offense to being just an absolute nightmare for the defense. Having the mobile quarterback's great. I'll take that every time. And I guarantee if you, I don't know about Kirk and Brian Ferentz, but I guarantee if you go up to Minnesota and say, would you guys like to have the next Russell Wilson again? I guarantee a Paul Christ is going to be all over that. He'll take that in an instant over what he's had the last couple of years.
I would agree with you. And let's use – you brought up the Iowa situation. I mean, look at C.J. Beathard. Did they rely on him to run? No, but he was more mobile than
– not – yeah, and he was not a bad running quarterback.
No, not at all. But they didn't need him to because of the offensive line situation. But when that weapon was there – I think that was a difference maker in the reason they were able to have the year they did in 2015.
Yeah, well, and at the same time, too, again, especially if you're going to reference 2015, that season Iowa went about three or four deep with at worst solid running backs.
Yes.
I mean, I would reckon to say, if you look at, say, look at Mills for Nebraska last year, Iowa's true fourth stringer in 2015. Who was that?
Oh, shit. I don't even remember. I can barely remember yesterday.
Iowa's fourth string running back in 2015 was what we've got in Dedrick Mills this year, or last year, rather. I think he came along. I think he was improving drastically by the end of the year. I don't think anybody was looking at Dedrick Mills, though, and going, hey, this is the guy we're going to ride our way to a 10-win season upon.
Yeah, I think third team actually would have been Akram Wadley, who's a pretty darn good running back.
Which is mind-blowing.
Yes.
You'd consider somebody like Wadley a third stringer.
But he was a freshman year, too.
Yeah, and that's what Nebraska had. Figure you go back to the 1990s where you're looking at, say, 1994, and when you're down in your third, fourth string, you've got NFL caliber guys like Damon Benning and Clinton Childs. That's what Iowa deals with on a not year in and year out basis, but more often than not. Wisconsin, absolutely. They've got this absolute stable of two or three guys every year who can hurt you. Ohio State, they've got a couple of running backs every year who can really hurt you. You take teams like that have two or three really solid running backs, and you throw a really good running quarterback into the mix, all of a sudden it becomes a whole nother equation. I mean, look at Nebraska last year. When Nebraska would do that delay zone or that zone read where the quarterback kind of does that slow handoff into the running back's belly and then has the decision to pull the ball back out and take it himself. You can't tell me that every defense we played against basically went like, yeah, whatever, dude. We know Martinez is keeping the ball. It's just something that they had to – that it was all Nebraska had last year. You knew he probably wasn't going to hand the ball off all that much. And if he was, it was going to be to Wandale or Mo Washington before Mo got kicked off the team. But those guys are just not built like every down running backs, and that's a handicap for you.
So you mentioned implementing new things. How much does this hurt from a development standpoint? And this just isn't for Nebraska. Hell, it's for every team out there because they can't do anything. From a development standpoint, how much does this set back Nebraska or any other team?
In terms of how much it sets them back, hard to put it like a concrete number on that. But in terms of setback, there's a definite setback. And it hurts even more when you think about the fact that 2 years without going to a bowl game, you've got 3 years without going to a bowl game now. That's a huge detriment. That's 3 months of practice lost. So for the guys who are now seniors, that's 3 months of practice less that those guys have under their belts going into their senior season. That's a huge amount of development. That's darn near one entire season's worth, regular season's worth of practice that these guys have lost out on by not going to a bowl game for three straight years. You just added another month of practice on. Well, I say a month of practice. It's 15 practices spread out over a month or so. So that's a lot of development. It's what I kind of liken it to is if you watch an NFL football game, it tends to be a very clean, concise football when you watch it compared to, say, college football. It's a little less precise. Go watch.
Did you just take a drink?
What's that?
Did you just take a drink right in the middle?
Sorry. Got to keep my voice going.
You couldn't even wait till I asked a question. And how many are you on now? Is this like number two or number three?
Because
you...
I'm actually still just on number one. But it's beer. Come on.
I know.
It treats coronavirus.
You're making that claim. Hops.
They told us barley and water. They told us alcohol kills coronavirus.
Damn, I'm gonna go drink straight bourbon.
I'm just extrapolating it from Purell hand gel to beer is all. Some people are extrapolating hydroxychloroquine to fish tank treatment. It's got to work. Please don't nobody take me seriously when I say any of this stuff. Drinking alcohol does not treat coronavirus. Go watch it, or actually you can't watch it now, maybe find replays, but think back to a month ago when you had XFL football games on. Load of fun. They're pounding beers in the locker room after the games. But it's not like you're watching this and saying to yourself, oh my gosh, this is a really high level, clean, concise, heavily developed version of football. It's fun, a lot of fireworks, cool to see some of these guys that we all knew from college playing, but it's not like you're watching the XFL and then you hold it up to the NFL. It's a whole nother animal. What I think you're going to see in college football, at least this fall, assuming, again, the season plays out, I think you're going to see a little bit of a rougher version than what we've seen in the past. Guys not able to get together and do 7-7 together voluntarily over the summer. Players doing the organized workouts over the summer. Players having missed most all of spring practice. You're going to see a rougher version of things this fall. You're going to see a less developed version of things this fall. The teams that helps are those teams that have played a lot the last 2 years. The Alabamas, the Clemsons, the Oklahomas, the teams that have gone to the playoffs, that have gotten that extra 1-2 months of even 3 months of practice in a season due to bowl games, due to going to the playoffs. Those are the teams that are going to still be functioning at a very high level. I would expect a team like Clemson to be right up at the top again, a team like Alabama. Those guys are going to be head and shoulders above a lot of people. There's going to be a gap there, a performance gap between those teams and everybody else because of this lack of being able to get together, have a spring practice, have these spring and summer workouts. It's going to be interesting to see how things shake out. Not so much for those top teams, but once you get past that top 5 to 10 teams in the country, I think there's going to be a big drop off in the overall quality of play.
How about from a, you know, in today's day of social distancing and you can only have so many people together, how does this affect the weight room and conditioning?
That'll be kind of interesting. I mean, because I know when I was in college, it didn't matter whether I was working out with a team or anybody else. I was working out nonstop year round. I don't think that's going to change things too much because I think guys are finding ways to work out, places to work out. Even at a high school level, if you go around the high school stadiums just here in Omaha, you'll see guys working out. Guys are going running stadium stairs, doing wind sprints, running pass routes, things like that. I'm seeing a lot of people around town still working out. They're just not doing it in the groups and in the organized groups that you saw before. So I think overall, I think that's going to still be there. It's just that conciseness that you see from people, from where you've had groups of guys getting together. And say you take a quarterback, a couple of tight ends, 5 wide receivers, and a handful of safeties and corners getting together and doing 7-on-7 for a couple hours, 5 days a week all summer. That's what you're missing out on. So it's that cleanness of execution is what's going to get lost more than the actual conditioning.
Do you think we have college football this fall? I mean, Kirk Herbstreit said he might, don't be surprised if you don't have college football this fall. As a medical professional, do you think it goes that long?
Boy, that's a big unknown. And maybe it's the optimist in me saying no. I think this runs its course in a couple of months because most viral epidemics and pandemics do run their course in a few months. But that means it takes us into the summer, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think this runs into at least the early summer. But I still think we have football in the fall. I think we have sports in the fall. My hope and belief at this point in time is we're back up and running with everything for the start of school for fall practices next fall.
Man,
late summer, early fall.
Yeah. Huh. That'd be crazy. There's just so many unknowns right now that I just like.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, this thing changes on a daily basis. I know. I mean, I've been on the phone and texting and emailing both within our own group and hospital as well as a couple of other hospitals here in town. Just, hey, how are you guys handling this situation? How do you handle this situation? And everybody, I mean, kind of the biggest answer is always, here's how we're doing it now, but things change on a nearly daily basis. That's the answer I get from everybody is, hey, here's how we did it yesterday on Friday, but geez, you know what? The protocols in terms of how we deal with this might be completely different come Monday. So I don't know if I've ever seen a situation, one like this in my life ever. Well, that's an easy one. I haven't. The flip side is how fast it's changing. And again, it's every day it's something new in terms of how we view this and how we deal with this.
Switching gears a little bit, how surprised were you that Tom Brady is now wearing a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform?
I don't know if I was all that surprised by it.
But to me, it's like Jordan wearing a Wizards uniform. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was a little different. Emmett Smith, Arizona Cardinals.
God, you know what? I totally forget. See, it's funny that you say that.
How about Joe Montana as a Kansas City Chief?
Well, I remember that just because of the Chiefs and the proximity, but I totally forget that Emmett Smith wore a Cardinals uniform. Do you think this becomes a case of people forget that Tom Brady will have worn a Buccaneers uniform?
I don't know if they'll forget it. What I'll be curious to see is he's going into a team right now that might be better equipped for that fast. Ooh, they got really good really quick, and all of a sudden they punch out another Super Bowl win. I mean, could you imagine Tom Brady winning, a seventh Super Bowl with Tampa Bay? You got a defense that just re-signed in Ndamukong Suh. So you got two Nebraska guys who are both perennial All-Pros, and Sue and Levante David on defense. You've got an offense that had basically every skill position weapon they needed, running back, wide receiver. They just needed a quarterback to get the ball to them. Offensive line could use a little buffing up, but it's not horrible. But I could literally see if Brady plays like if Tom Brady plays like 38-year-old Tom Brady, Tampa Bay could win the Super Bowl this year.
Wow, look at you.
Wouldn't have thought that would have happened, but yeah, I'm just a tiny bit surprised we didn't see it sooner.
Yeah, now it's like a race. Who can win? Like, is Belichick the brains or was it Brady? I mean, that's what it's going to come down to, right?
Although I think they had a hell of a system there. And I think some of it was even Josh McDaniels, coordinator. Because I'm thinking about, was it Matt Castle? Was that the quarterback who was like when Tom Brady tore his ACL, was it Matt Castle who stepped in? Took the Patriots into the playoffs, and then Matt Castle left, signed a massive contract, and I think with the Chiefs, actually, and then, like, nobody ever saw him again.
That tends to happen, though, right? Except for the guy from the 49ers right now.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a system going on there with the Patriots, and I think they're still going to be good. I just Yeah, Tom Brady's the guy's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, you just don't – he's had a constant rotation of supporting cast. The 20 years that he's been in New England, it was a constant rotation of different people, and he's the one constant, at least from a player standpoint. Now, and again, it's – I think Belichick's awfully good, but I mean – show me a great coach who didn't have a great quarterback. Show me a great quarterback who didn't have really good supporting cast around him. So I think Tom Brady is arguably the best quarterback ever. But I still think Belichick was an insanely good coach, and I think it was the combination of both those guys. I think Brady's got a chance to do some great things in Tampa Bay. I think New England's got a chance to continue to be a power within the AFC. I don't think New England without Brady, and I don't think Brady without New England will long-term be as good as they were together. Now, I think Brady's only going to play another year or two, but
yeah, your body can only take so much, right? You can only defy Father Time for so long. I mean, to me, he's already he's playing on borrowed time now anyway.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't found a cure for the common birthday yet. So, which he's done some remarkable things. I mean, the guy's been damn near ageless in terms of what we've seen from a productivity and physical skills standpoint. On the flip side, you're never going to see Tom Brady, and you haven't for a few years. You've never seen him just take off and run with the ball to get that 4 yards for a first down. I mean, if he feels a sack coming, he goes down. I mean, he's like, I'm taking the sack or I'm throwing the ball away. I'm not taking off and running. So he I know he recognizes his limitations. If there's a guy who's defied time and defied that physical breakdown that you generally see from all athletes at some point, he's one of the few guys who's done it. I mean, there's been guys like Bruce and Clay Matthews, Jackie Slater, guys like that. But what he's done has been pretty, nothing short of remarkable.
Hey, let's go back to the college game real quick and recruiting, because is this an advantage or a huge disadvantage for Scott Frost? Because I would think, you know, you get Scott in a room, there's something about his personality, the way you can kind of feel that energy. When you have to FaceTime somebody or have a Skype conversation, how just odd is that for recruiting? And how about your nephew? I mean, what's he seeing in this time of recruiting when you can't go anywhere and you can't talk to anybody face to face?
Well, that's a few different questions there. I mean, so everybody's got that same level of restriction placed upon them. I think for a lot of the schools themselves, it definitely makes things tougher. Because, I mean, if you're a school that has some really great facilities, has that ability to bring somebody in and kind of wow somebody, a place like Oregon, a place like Iowa, to a degree Nebraska, you lose that. I don't care how many virtual tours you set up on the internet. It's not like actually being there.
Yeah. It's touch and feel,
so
right?
You lose that wow factor from that. I think for a group of guys like Frost and his staff, they're some of the better in-person. And I get this from talking to a few of the players that I know, but especially, I mean, there's families I know whose kids have been, are down at Nebraska now and are currently being recruited. And they said one of the strengths of Nebraska is that they said they're one of the better groups of coaches in person. You sit and talk with those guys, whether it's in Lincoln at the university or whether it's in your family's living room. Across the board, they said there's few coaching staffs that across the board are better in person than Scott's staff. They're really good at that. I think it's a big handicap for those guys. For those teams that rely on the ability of their coaches to wow a recruit, to inspire a family, when you're sitting there talking to them in person, that's now lost. And so I think that really hurts them. But that's for any school that has that kind of coaching staff. There's some schools that just don't have that. I've heard Brian Kelly's a great guy. I've heard he's an impressive guy to talk with. But I've heard for Notre Dame, it's 95% of their recruiting is just, hey, we're Notre Dame, and that's it.
Yeah,
you're gonna go there because it's Notre Dame, and that's a go to the campus, see the facility. I've never been there. You have. You said it's like wow.
Yeah, well, like as a Roman Catholic, it kind of might mean a little bit more to me, but it is very pristine. I mean, you see what you've seen forever, like on Rudy. I know the stadium's different now. You see Touchdown Jesus, and you just see all this stuff. You're like, oh my God! I mean, it just oozes of excellence. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be huge or awe-inspiring. It's got that fact that it's iconic, I think, hits a lot of people. I mean, you got places like Texas A&M where it's, man, bring a recruit in on game day at Texas A&M. I've heard that's just mind-blowing.
That's still my favorite. Of all the places I've seen a game, A&M is still my number one, just because.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's just because of all the pomp and circumstance, the tradition, the band, the Yell Squad. It's a really cool experience. Yeah, it's my favorite place.
See, and if you lose that from a recruiting standpoint, now I know we're talking about getting into next fall, but if you lose that aspect to the recruiting during the off season, right now though, kind of like I said, it's that. ability to interact in person with a recruit, I think that's something that it very well could hurt Nebraska, because that's one of this coaching staff's strengths. Talking to my nephew, talking to my son's high school teammates, Westside has, they've got three or four kids now with D1 offers.
That's crazy.
And so you talk with those kids, and again, the big thing is they've got coaches visiting the kids, but again, it's literally coach comes to town and we're going to meet at such and such location, and I'm going to sit on the other side of the room and not touch you. It's hard to do that. So huge amounts of this are all taking place, Skype and Zoom and text messaging and Snapchat, et cetera, is how they're doing everything at this point in time. It's all on social media. It's all on via technology. Like I said, talking to a lot of them, the FaceTime, the Zoom, those are things that have become really big for the recruits right now, that just within, I mean, we're talking just within the last 2 weeks have gone from probably never would have been used, or people hadn't thought of using them, to where now it's the sole platform on which a lot of these schools are interacting with recruits.
How about your daughter? I know she came back from spring break from Florida State, probably not going back. Do you have to go down and get her stuff, move her out of a dorm? What has to happen there?
God, my wife and I were talking about that this morning. So she's on the rowing team there, and they had spring break was actually last week. So they had instituted, hey, spring break for that first 2 weeks following spring break, all classes are going to be online. Now, again, I'm talking about this was 2-3 weeks ago was the discussion. And at that point in time, the sports themselves hadn't fully shut down yet. And said, so what they were doing was they were still going to stay in town and practice for spring break. They were going to stay in town and practice for those 2 weeks when everybody else was doing online classes. Florida State was in fact keeping the residence halls open for students that were going to stay. And what ended up happening then was within a span of just, I think, 1 or 2 days, all of a sudden, then you had the NCAA basketball tournament cancels, Creighton's basketball game in the Big East tournament gets canceled at halftime. All of that stuff, just like whenever the College World Series, all of that happened in about a 2-day span. And when that happened, and then the NCAA and all the other sports governing bodies decided, we got to shut everything down. Their whole season down at Florida State as well, obviously, got canceled. And so now she's kind of stranded, and now she's kind of like going to be on an island for the next 3 weeks, living in the dorms by her. I mean, there's going to be a small handful of other kids, but for the most part, it's going to be her and like 11 other kids in an entire dorm.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
And so at that point, my wife called her up, and we kind of made the decision, we're pulling the plug. You're coming home. And so she packed up all, like, basically laptop, all of her school books, everything she needed for school, and then anything else she could squeeze into a duffel bag, which wasn't much. And we flew her out of Tallahassee, and that was a couple weeks ago at this point. Flew her out. And so all of her stuff's still there now. She's back at home in her own bedroom and has enough clothes, and it's going to be just fine. So it's not a huge deal. But I think they said the county in Florida, it's Leon County, is where Tallahassee's at. Leon County is currently on a lockdown.
Oh, wow.
The campus is closed to everybody except essential staff and the few students who are still there living in the dorms. And those students have to be, they want those students out by April 4th. So essentially end of next week, all those students have to be out of the dorm as well. And if you've still got stuff there in the dorm, it's basically on lockdown until that lockdown's lifted.
Does your daughter like learning online? Because my son goes to the University of Kansas, right? He does not like learning online. He's like, I'd rather be in a classroom.
None of my kids do. Drives them nuts. I think, and some of it's that social aspect. Yeah. Some of it's the ability to sit there and, hey, hold on a second. Can we talk about that again? Or, I got a question about this. And they're doing some classes. It is interesting because my son will put on, pop in his earbuds and flip open his laptop. And here's the teacher and 15 kids all on Zoom or some other type of video teleconferencing, all sitting having a classroom discussion together. And so they're doing stuff like that, but I don't think it's the same. I think for my daughter, she doesn't like, my oldest daughter I'm talking about, I don't think she likes it because I think she ends up, and this is for everybody. She made the varsity as a freshman. They Yep. had some, they've got kind of a shorter fall season they do every year, but then I think they got one, maybe two events in this spring. I think it was, they got two events in this spring and then the rest of the season's canceled. So you missed out on that. She's all her friends on campus. She's in a sorority. Couple of her roommates she's pretty tight with. And so all of that, it's tough to go through when that's like your normal is all of a sudden taken away. And it's same for my other two kids in high school and middle school that, I sense a growing irritability, I guess might be the best way to put it, or it's just that normal social interaction has been, it's gone.
Yeah.
They just don't have that right now. And I mean, you can only, at some point, as much as I think we always make fun of ourselves, but especially the younger generations for how much time they spend on social media and texting and Snapchatting and talking on the phone. They're still doing a lot of in-person interaction and that's just gone now. And I think that's tough for them to have to deal with. I feel like, I mean, me myself, I'm lucky. I still go to work and here's 20, 30, 40, 50 people that at least from a distance at work, I'm interacting with in person on a daily basis. Yeah. Of course, we're all wearing medical masks and N95s and all of that stuff, but you're at least interacting with other people. And that isolation is hard on people. It's that can be kind of tough to deal with. And I think it's really tough, especially for younger people and all three of my kids. Like I said, there's kind of just sort of this low degree of growing irritability, not having that interaction.
Well, my buddy's a lawyer and he said, and he's a divorce lawyer and he goes, oh, you'd be surprised. Already the restraining orders are up.
Are they really?
Yes. He goes, restraining orders already up. And I said, well, there's a big shock. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports. He's been pretty active on Twitter. He takes shots at me every once in a while. And he does answer your questions if you send him some questions. We'll try to be back in the studio, maybe not, at least in a social distancing way. We'll try not to wait another 2 months. We'll have something to talk about. Dr. Rob, it's always good talking to you, my friend. Thanks for doing the social distancing Husker Doc Talk podcast.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we'll do this again. This might be a slightly more convenient, though less desirable way of doing
that.
We'll get a few more.
It is convenient for you, but you got to admit it is fun to come to my basement and drink beer.
Oh, never denied that.
All right, Dr. Rob, thank you so much, and thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.